You're listening to A Tale of Two Takes, a podcast about movies.
Hello, and welcome to A Tale of Two Takes. My name is Tate.
And my name is Abby.
And we are here to talk to you today about the 2007 hit film by Michael Bay, Transformers. But before we get into all of that, since this is our first episode, we thought that we would tell you a little bit about us. So we are a recently married couple.
Yes,
1 week as of today. We are recording this on May 10th, 2025. We really like movies, don't we, Abs?
Well, you love movies. You're a xenophile. But I have a leisure love of movies.
I'm a what?
Is that not what it's called?
Cinephile.
Cinephile. Okay, yes. Not xenophile.
Xenophile... I think that's a very different thing, but that's okay.
We can leave it in there. Well, so you're a cinephile, and you majored in world cinema for undergrad, and you've always loved movies, and I feel like I'm a leisure lover of movies.
Yes, this is very true. Abby is a leisure lover of movies. Abby has the distinct characteristic of always looking up Wikipedia plots for movies before she sees them. Or while she's seeing them. And it is my goal to make sure that that happens a little bit less.
Yeah.
And it is Abby's goal to make me a little bit less uptight about movies.
Yes, yes. I don't like film snobs, people that are pretentious about film. I think the film community is a wonderful community where art can be celebrated, and it doesn't need to be just for, like, the top people that have seen movies. So I feel like this whole podcast is kind of, you know, seeing the dichotomy of someone that is very much an expert in film versus someone like me who's a layman in film, and kind of just our two takes on that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and we, you know, we don't want to make this podcast about, like, just the only things that are new or the things that are best. So how this podcast is going to work is every so often it's going to be a movie picked by me that Abby has never seen before. And every so often, it's going to be a movie picked by Abby that I've never seen before. And then, of course, we will cover a few new releases, probably one or two every single month. So today, we are discussing Transformers.
Yeah.
So how about that? So, Abby, have you ever seen Transformers before?
This was my first time watching Transformers. My only experience of Transformers is doing the ride at Universal and participating in that.
So you and I have very different experiences when it comes to this franchise, and I'm sure we'll get to the other movies at some point down the line, but we just watched the first movie for this. My experience with this franchise is I saw all of them as a kid in theaters. I remember seeing this movie in theaters, and it was fun. I do not remember a lot about when I saw it in theaters.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine so. You're only eight.
Yeah, but I also, truthfully, don't remember a lot about this movie, even though we watched it last night. Suffice it to say, I mean, so let's go over the premise of this movie a little bit. So the premise, for anyone who doesn't know, is about a boy named Sam Witwicky, portrayed by Shia LaBeouf, who goes to purchase a beat-down car. This is a gift from his parents, and he discovers his car is actually part of an alien robotic race known as the Autobots, who are morally good robot alien organisms that are fighting against the morally bad Decepticons. And both these parties are now on Earth looking for some device called the AllSpark, which essentially gives them unlimited energy. Mm. Do you have anything to add to that premise?
No, I think that about sums it up. But, yeah, I do have something to add about Shia LaBeouf. I feel like I'm being Mandela affected here. I really thought, I wrote down Shiloh LaBeouf.
Shiloh? like the book about the dog?
Yes, and then it was only when I looked this movie up later that I crossed it out to Shia. Josh Duhamel is also in this movie. And so is Megan Fox.
Megan Fox and Tyrese Gibson.
And Irving from Severance.
And John Turturro. Yes, Irving from Severance.
I just felt like that was, what you described is very much the standard linear description of this movie, but I felt like there were a lot of other things going on too.
There's a lot of things going on in this
And I
movie.
think that's one of the biggest things I didn't like about it.
We have essentially three plot lines, maybe more, but three main plot lines, I would say, that don't really intersect at all until the third act.
Yeah, and that is one of my main issues with the film. I have a lot of issues with the film.
I mean, there's a lot of issues that many people have with the
Yeah.
film.
I had more cons than pros. I'm just gonna put that
That's fair. That's
out
understandable. I mean, look, this whole franchise is one that has not really been critically acclaimed. I think that this one does have more positive reviews than negative reviews. But besides that, I think the only other live-action Transformers that really has a lot of positive reviews is Bumblebee, which that I mean that came out in 2018. That's a very different film for a lot of reasons. But this was our introduction to what people call the Bayformers,
Yeah.
Michael Bay's Transformers, which has lots of his signature Bayhem in it. Yeah, mayhem, but Bay.
Bayhem,
Yeah,
yeah, no,
Bayhem.
I got
Yeah.
you.
Now, let me ask you this, Abs. How familiar are you with Michael Bay in general? Because you haven't seen Transformers before, but have you seen Michael Bay movies?
What other ones does he have?
He did The Island, he did Ambulance, he did Armageddon.
See, these just aren't my type of
He
movies.
did Pearl Harbor, I think. I think he did
Oh, I
Pearl
do
Harbor.
love
Yeah, you do like Pearl Harbor. A movie that is 3 hours.
bad. So bad, but so good. Yes, I do like Pearl Harbor, probably for the romantic aspect of it. But.
To be honest with you, I haven't seen Pearl Harbor, nor do I really have any intention of
Oh,
seeing.
we should do Pearl Harbor
Okay,
another episode.
we'll discuss that at a different point. But so, okay, let's really start out from the beginning here.
Beginning,
We're
y'all.
gonna kind of we're gonna go all over the place. Like, there are certain scenes I want to talk about. There's certain ideas I want to talk about. I'm sure there's plenty of stuff that you want to talk
Yeah, I
about.
wrote down 3 pages of
Yeah,
notes.
I have. Well, my notebook is smaller. I don't know, like 5 pages of notes, but mine's smaller.
But the movie starts in modern day Qatar.
Yes, it does. Well, before that, hang on. I just want to point out one great thing about this movie and all the Transformers movies is Peter Cullen voices the main Transformer, Optimus Prime, and it
He
starts
has a
out,
nice
he
voice.
has a great
Yeah.
voice. It starts out with his narration, and it's awesome. Like,
Yes.
I could just listen to a whole audiobook of him explaining the Transformers script, and I think it would be better than this.
Yes. I wrote down Lost Cube, Unrest, and the Galaxy. I felt like I was I felt like I was watching the opening of like some Guardians of the Galaxy Marvel. Because it felt like very Thanos oriented, where it's like Lost Cube, there's unrest in the galaxy, and it's all happening on a foreign planet called Earth. And I
Well,
was
I
like,
mean,
okay, like.
look, this all came out before the
No, for
MCU
sure,
even
yeah.
started. Iron
No,
Man came
that's
out in
why.
2008, so
But it did give me some parallels to Iron Man, because immediately after that, we open up with like war in the Middle East.
Well, that's just kind of the side effect of the time period this
Yeah,
movie
no,
came in
of
too, you
course,
know? I
yeah.
mean, around this time there were so many movies that would have scenes that were, war in the Middle East, obviously like Iron Man, Transformers, of course, The Hurt Locker won Best Picture 2009.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we start out with that, and then immediately we get this helicopter. That here's the thing, I don't know if this is really explained. I don't understand it. Maybe there was a quick throwaway line, but they just let this unknown helicopter land at like a military base. I feel like there had to be a line that said like, "Oh, we know this helicopter." Like maybe the Decepticon, like I don't know, hacked into the system and
I
gave the
think
right
that was
code.
the implication, because it also had a US Air Force like marker on the helicopter.
It felt like an indictment of like
Ignorance.
military security is
Yeah.
really
Like
what
it
it
kind of
felt
felt
like.
like they were being a little too loosey-goosey. They had like some concerns, and then they were like, well, there's a US Amer or sorry, US Air Force tag, whatever, we'll just let them on.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, they're not responding. Like, they didn't
They didn't
respond. Is that
respond, right?
because I mean, the Decepticon just creates a kind of like
A
visual human,
disguise,
yeah.
yeah.
But yeah, no, that was weird. Another issue that I kind of have with like this whole concept, this scene in general, is after this scene takes place, this Decepticon has attacked this military base. They say multiple times, they're like, there were no, we don't know if there's any survivors. We don't know if there's any survivors. But I'm like 90% sure that the general we see at the base in the beginning is with everyone else while they're saying we don't know if there are any survivors.
See, I just did not.
I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong. That. But I remember thinking, I was like, what? Like, there's one right there.
Yeah.
He's. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just another old white guy that looks like a military general and they're just getting them mixed up. I don't know. But I don't. So, that's how the movie starts. We get Josh Duhamel and Tyrese Gibson and a whole band of military soldiers who escape this military base when a Decepticon attacks. And then we move to one of the other reasons why these movies do kind of work, and that's Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
And I say part of the reason why he makes these movies work is because he has such a frantic energy.
Yeah.
That is just insane. I don't even think I would call it good, but it's definitely, it's entertaining.
Yeah. I wrote down that Shia LaBeouf's character, Sam, who we dive more into this movie about his grandfather and the history behind the glasses and stuff.
Yeah, Archibald Witwicky.
Okay, I have two things I wrote down. One, I wrote down that his grandfather was on the Charlotte ship from National Treasure in the Arctic Circle.
Was he actually? No. Oh, I thought you meant
that was a joke. That was a joke. That whole scene about, like, them with the ship and the Arctic Ocean was giving National Treasure. And then the dad from National Treasure ended up being the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, John Voight.
And I was like,
father of Angelina Jolie.
I just felt like I was in some multiverse with Transformers and National Treasure. It was just...
Didn't National Treasure come out in 2007 as well?
I'm telling you, they...
Or no, maybe that was the second one.
That was definitely... It was 2004.
Yeah,
they did not have original ideas, apparently, in the 2000s. But I also wrote down that Sam should teach a masterclass in Riz and manipulation. Because I truly felt like he had so much charisma. But he, like, I kind of got the impression when he first came on the screen that he was going to be like... smart tech guy, but like kind of realized immediately that's not him. Not saying he's not smart, but he's just kind of like cruising his way through life with his charisma and low-key manipulating people.
Yeah, that's the thing. Sam doesn't really have any skills.
Yeah, and he's like so average.
Like, he's the main character, but his main skill is that he just talks a lot.
Yeah.
He can, it's not even that he's talking himself out of situations, it's that he's just talking to delay.
No, like, he literally is a manipulative charisma guy. Like, he uses his words to get out of stuff or to get things he wants.
Well, what did he get that he wanted?
He got the A in the class.
Oh, he did get the A in the class.
Yeah, he was like, I need three A's and $2,000.
He appealed to the emotional, he appealed to his teacher's emotions.
He knows what he uses pathos.
Yeah, his pathos. Arguments. Is that pathos? That is,
it is pathos. Yeah. Yeah. I got a 5 and appealing, I know.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great. Well, yeah. Okay. So one thing I thought was really funny, Shia LaBeouf has this whole crush on Michaela Baines, played by Megan Fox. And there's a scene after Shia LaBeouf has bought Bumblebee, doesn't know it's Bumblebee yet, and he sees Michaela Baines at, like, this lake party that, like, I don't really know what is happening here. Like,
I have a few comments I wrote about
it's just this random lake party. And they're all in the 11th grade, too, so it's not like it's a graduation party. Like, I don't really understand what the purpose of the... I mean, a party can just be a party.
Yeah.
But I was just questioning, like, who's throwing this? What is happening? But my favorite part of this whole scene is that Sam leaves his buddy. I think Miles was his name. Sam leaves his buddy Miles. We never see Miles again.
We never see Miles again.
Like, we're made to believe that Miles...
He was so irrelevant, I didn't even write down his name.
I wrote it down somewhere, I think. I can't remember. I think I wrote down, do we ever see Miles again? Because here's the thing. I've seen all the movies.
Not again. Why does he even bring a friend?
No.
Like, you could literally have the exact same movie without him.
I think the only reason
was
that
he's
Michael there...
Was he Michael Bay's nephew?
No, I think the only reason that he was there was to make Sam seem, like, a little bit less creepy just going to this party alone and then picking up Michaela Baines. I feel like I have to say her full name. I don't know.
I don't think you have to say her full name. I don't think it would have been less creepy or not. He is just a creepy dude.
Well, no. I'm not saying that he's not creepy in some way, but, like... I think it would be weirder if he just came alone, you know? Because then it looks like he's like scouting.
Yeah. But you know whose name I did write down? I wrote down Michaela's boyfriend, quote unquote, situationship.
Travis? I don't know.
Trent.
Was it Trent? Oh,
I said Trent is giving Kato from Hunger Games. Because that guy was just bad news.
I think he's played by Travis. I think that's why I thought Travis. I think he's played by Travis Van Winkle.
TR names, it's fine. Yeah. He is giving Kato from Hunger Games. He had that blonde hair, really smoldering. I would not trust him near my drinks at all. He's just very,
Now, he's in two scenes. Do we think Alexander Ludwig could have done better? That's who plays Kato in the Hunger Games. He was in
Race. Done better what?
As Trent.
I mean, I genuinely think you could have brought in any blonde 6'4" white guy and it would have been the same acting.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, two scenes can make a difference. You know? Someone can be memorable in two scenes. He wasn't memorable in this, but I think he's done a lot of other good work in general.
Yeah. Another thing I want to point out is, like, right after we see Trent and Michaela is like, ugh, I don't want to be with you. And she goes off alone and Sam follows her. She gets in the car and she's like, I don't know who you are. And I just hate when in movies they portray these popular kids as not knowing or recognizing people they have literally gone to school with for years. Like, to me, that is one of the most unrealistic things. Like, I feel like it's only human nature to be curious about your classmates or, like, know their names. And it's just weird to me that she was like, we're in class together? Like, that was weird. I hate that.
Yeah, no, that
and
is...
And it just kind of, to me, like, it was, like, it rubbed me as, like, ugh, so self-absorbed.
That is a very annoying trope, too. Especially consider, like, I went to a very, very big high school. And even people who, like, I didn't know their name, if I, like, knew that they were, like, through middle and high school with me, I recognized them at the very least.
Would that be one thing if you, like... You went to a massive high school. If you didn't have class with someone, sure, whatever. You may not know their name, but right?
Yeah, no, I knew
together.
I knew everyone in my classes.
Like, had class together since the fifth grade. Like, it's so weird. She's like, I don't know who you are. Sam, is it? Like, what? That is so unrealistic. I hated that scene.
Yeah, no, that is crazy. You know what scene that we've skipped? And we don't have to go, like, scene by scene here.
Yeah,
but,
the
like,
Uncle Bobby,
like,
Sarah not crying about
We need to talk about Bernie Mac being in this movie, because Bernie Mac is great and I wish he was in more of this movie. And he also, I think he passed away a year or two after this movie came out, so it's kind of a shame.
Who does he play?
Bernie Mac he's the car dealer. He's
Uncle Bobby B.
Uncle Bobby B, yeah.
Bobby Bolivia.
Bobby Bolivia.
That's what I wrote down.
That short scene is one of my favorite scenes in this whole movie, and it's mostly because I think Bernie Mac just has this incredible, like, comedic energy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's like, well, we're practically family. And then, like, he's yelling at his grandmama. She gives him the middle finger. And he's like, she's deaf. She can't hear for shit. Yeah. I mean, that's a great scene.
I also love that he owned a petting zoo.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Did he really? Did he really? I didn't even realize that. This man's running a used car dealership and a petting zoo. It's kind of, I know you didn't see Minecraft, but, like, that's very similar to a character in Minecraft.
No, like, he literally,
movie.
I wrote down, owns used car dealership and also a petting zoo, because they showed petting zoo with an ostrich on screen.
Wow. I love that. I love it.
Also, where do they live? Was it L.A.?
It's L.A.
Okay.
They live in L.A.
Okay.
They have a nice house.
Yeah. No.
They have a really nice house.
No, like, everyone in this movie has a nice house.
Everyone in this movie has a nice house, and everyone in this movie is hot. And that's my next point, because this is the most Michael Bay thing that you can expect from this movie. I know I mentioned it to you last night, but, okay. Abby was just grabbing her phone with her feet.
I was just trying to...
Okay. Anyways, part of this plot is, you know, the Decepticons try to attack the military base, try to hack into it, were unsuccessful, and now the NSA and Department of Defense, like, bring together, like, this, like, 50 hackers to, like, figure out what's going on. And it's a room full of, like, you know, stereotypically, like, nerdy-looking guys or whatever, you know? And then just in the middle of it, just a young, blonde, tanned, like just really attractive woman. Not that there can't be someone who's like a hacker and fits all those things, but it's such a Michael Bay thing specifically to have that be like our main focal point for this plot.
Yeah. So, yeah. And she's like Australian.
Yeah, she's Australian too.
We don't even know if she's an American citizen, and she's helping the top security of the United States of America at the Pentagon.
And she, like, part of her plot is she needs some extra help. So she goes to this guy. I don't know how she even knows this guy. She goes to this other guy named Glenn, I think is his name. And played by Anthony Anderson, who I think is also great. He was, you know, he was in Blackish. He played the dad in Blackish. Emmy nominated many times for that. But she goes to Anthony Anderson, tries to get his help with something. I don't even know if he actually helps at all, like, during that scene. I can't remember.
He
do you
does.
Remember? Does he?
So before we get to that scene, just because on the way to that scene, and I just want to say we are very familiar with the DC metropolitan area.
We are.
And they showed a scene in Georgetown that we are familiar with. And then they immediately showed like the Brooklyn Bridge.
You're so hung up on it. Like she paused the movie last night and was like, where did they just go?
No, where because they showed a cable bridge, which does not exist.
No,
in DC.
I agree. Doesn't it? It was very weird. It was disconcerting.
Just so like they are not cable bridges in this city, and it's like It was just so weird. And then they go to this random looking house, and he does help in that scene. That's when they find out about the Select 7 or 7th State or whatever.
Oh, like Sector 7.
Yeah, and Sector then that's 7, like, yeah. And then they find out it's related to Archibald Witwicky.
Yeah, Archibald Witwicky. Captain Archibald Witwicky. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah.
And then the FBI raids them.
Yeah, and then the FBI comes in and everyone gets tackled and Glenn's cousin gets tackled. Played by Omar Miller, who was just Cornbread in Sinners.
Yes, great movie. Yeah.
Yeah, great movie. Great movie. If we'd started this a little bit earlier, we probably would have reviewed that. Yeah. Yeah.
So now that we're like 20 minutes in, let's just, you know, pause, kind of do a recap. What Tate and I are saying is we have three different plots going on. We have the Pentagon plot.
We haven't even talked about the actual Transformers.
We haven't even talked about the actual Transformers. We have the Qatar?
Yeah.
Plot, and we have the L.A. Sam Megan Fox plot, which is the main plot.
Yeah, that's
but
the main
way,
plot.
But either way, we have three Sam different is the plots main character. Going on. And it's just, like, to me, all over the place. And I think, like, at this point, I feel like they don't really show the Pentagon and the Qatar plots that often. We're really mainly focused on Sam, who does own Bumblebee.
Well, here's the weird thing about the connection of plots here, is there, like, we would see the Sam plot, and it would go through, like, 2 days in the Sam. Like, we'd see night, day. And then we'd head back to the Qatar plot, and it would basically be picking up from where we left off.
Yeah.
Which was, like, the timeline of this movie was just so weird to me. I didn't really understand, you know, how these were all lining up or whatnot. Not that it really matters. It's all going to come to the same place in the end, and it's going to be a nonsensical but honestly impressive CGI battle at the very end.
Yeah, I did write that down as a pro. I said the pro is action sequence and visual effects.
Yeah.
That's it. That's about it. That, all right.
I wrote same pros plus Bernie Mac.
I did also write down getting to know the Transformers personalities, which we can get into the Transformers. I have some predictions for the rest of the series.
Oh, whatever your predictions are, doesn't matter. I'm going to tell you this straight up. There are so many things that are established in this movie
that just
go by the wayside.
Okay, perfect.
So
some continuity issues, I fear.
So many continuity issues.
Okay.
The Transformers movies, like, I would say their signature thing is that every single movie gives a different reason why the Transformers are on Earth.
Yeah, I was going to ask a spoiler, but, like, we can just move on to talking about the Transformers and how we get to that point of the movie.
Yeah, so Sam buys Bumblebee. He buys Bumblebee, who, what kind of car Is he originally? Camaro. Is he a Camaro, he's a Camaro originally? And then he upgrades to a newer Camaro, is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on.
Well, they can scan cars so they can get like their new form.
Yeah.
That's what they did in the beginning, like when they all come down from the asteroids or whatnot. So yeah, Sam has Bumblebee, who's like an old beat up Camaro, and like you know, pretty nice looking car, I think, for like a kid's like first car.
Yeah.
And then Sam discovers that his car is actually a giant talking robot alien.
Yeah.
Who, well, not talking, actually, because Bumblebee can only communicate through the radio.
Yes, for most of the movie. And then at the end, he gets his voice back.
Which, by the way, gone. Gone in the next movie.
So, like, also, was his voice American? I couldn't tell.
I don't know.
It did not sound like an American accent.
I cannot tell you. I couldn't tell you. I genuinely forgot that he got his voice back at the end of this movie because it's gone for every subsequent film. Yeah,
because I felt like they made a big deal about it, but
he is voiced briefly by Dylan O'Brien in the Bumblebee movie, though.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So American.
I suppose so.
I also wrote down based on the first two attacks that we see, which are the two in Qatar. Transformers are easily beating the Americans, beating the humans. They're far more sophisticated than any technology on Earth, which they dive into at the Pentagon scenes.
Yeah.
They're saying like, okay, these alien robot things are hacking into your system within 10 seconds. Like there's something's gotta be done. So that's kind of like the first half, I would say, is building this up. And then Sam sees his car turn into Bumblebee, and then Bumblebee kind of signals all of the other Transformers to come to Earth.
Yes.
And yeah, we can talk a little bit more about those other Transformers because there's four other ones.
Hang on. Like, let's also talk about when Sam first discovers Bumblebee is a alien robot. Sam gets arrested by the police.
Yeah.
And it is the most aggressive, like, police interrogation for no reason.
Yeah.
Do you, like, this police officer is just a jerk. He's awful.
Yeah. Sam is a teenager who's not particularly spectacular. And the police are finding him at night under a bridge. And they're probably assuming the worst. They are assuming the worst. So, like, I can see why they have assumptions. I don't necessarily agree with that, but they do think he's like under the influence.
Here's my favorite part about this whole scene is that the implication is essentially that Shia LaBeouf's frantic energy is just so unnatural for any normal human being that he just has to be on drugs.
Like, yeah. Like, I mean, he is frantic.
He
needs to be, if he's he not on weed, he needs to be on Adderall.
He needs to be on Adderall.
Like something, he needs to be on a drug. Whether it's a good one or a bad one, he needs to be on it.
Sam Witwicky is insane, and he just gets more insane with every movie.
And that's why I don't feel like we need to watch the other ones for this podcast.
Okay, so here's the fun thing. I love the third movie. I really do. I genuinely love the third movie. The second movie is my least favorite movie of all time. I hate that movie
It's worse than, like, I can't even think of bad movies.
Yeah, name a bad movie, I hate
Jack
this.
And Jill.
That's close. that's close. The other ones, they're not good. Bumblebee's good. I like Bumblebee a lot. And then, of course, like, the animated Transformers movies, those are all good.
Yeah. So, once we see Bumblebee start to fight off Megatron...
Bumblebee's... When is Bumblebee fighting off Megatron? What are you talking about?
I don't know, but at some point I wrote down, slay Bumblebee, slay. And that Sam is constantly getting gaslit and beat up.
Are you talking about when Bumblebee's like... I think Bumblebee fights Barricade, or takes them away from Barricade. Another Decepticon.
Okay, then that's definitely when the police interrogation happens. Because he is getting gaslit there. Sam is.
No, it happens at a different time.
What?
I think. Okay. There's so many... I just want to bring this up right now because I thought this was hilarious. Abby, at one point during the movie, asked for a time check. And we still had an hour left in the movie. And the look, like, just the look of despair that Abby had on her face was incredible.
I was depressed. And here's the thing,
it was awesome. I loved it.
I absolutely love watching and partaking in new film, but action movies are just never, action sci-fi specifically, are never going to be my favorite genre.
No, that's fair.
So, like, I'll sit through, I'll do what I need to do for the podcast.
We got to watch Star Trek now, Adam.
But I don't know if I'm going to particularly enjoy it. But can we also talk about, because we're getting close to where the Transformers come in on the asteroid. But before that scene happened, after all of this happens and Sam gets back Bumblebee after he's been interrogated, there's this one scene where Bumblebee's driving away and Michaela's in the back. Sam is like, you can sit in the driver's seat. And Michaela's like, no, Bumblebee's driving. And then he was like, oh, you can sit on my lap then. Oh, cringe.
That's Riz.
Cringe. That's, it is Riz. And
that's exactly 2007 what Riz. That's
but
what that is.
But there's no way that's comfortable in that car.
Oh, probably not.
There's no way that's comfortable.
Wait, was this before or after he upgraded?
It was definitely after.
Oh, okay.
Because this is right before the asteroids came on.
Yeah.
So that is a good segue into the asteroids.
Yeah, we get the asteroids now. We get to meet the other Autobots.
I'm not going to lie. I would, if I saw this asteroids coming, I would think it's the final day on Earth. It's the final calling.
Well, they're not large asteroids.
Yeah, but like if I saw all of these asteroids, I'd be like, all right, it's the revelations is happening. Like it's
okay.
It's the final calling. All
right, so let's give me your impression on all the different Autobots that we have here. Do you remember all four of them?
Yes,
names?
I wrote them down.
Okay.
So Transformers. So I have Bumblebee. He's a sleigh. He doesn't really talk much, but he's a sleigh.
Yeah. Well,
Ratchet.
We can't talk.
Ratchet.
What's Ratchet's role?
He's the EMT.
Yeah,
medic.
he's the medical officer of.
Yeah, I liked him.
Yeah.
Optimus Prime is like your typical, you know, leader. Think Dumbledore, Aslan-esque.
Yeah, Aslan. Well, okay. All right.
Like the leader of the tribe. All right.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Right, and then I have Ironhide. I genuinely think that Transformer Man is going to be Judas. I don't know if he's going to come back up, but he was giving very not content. There were a couple moments throughout the movie where he was like kind of going against what Optimus Prime wanted. And I could see him going and joining the Decepticons one day. And then my final word is Jazz, who I forgot existed. So I have nothing to add to him.
Yeah. Cause, I mean, that's, yeah.
Well, I guess he dies.
Jazz does die. He gets torn in half, which, for the record, comes with a baller killer line from Megatron, if you ask me. Because Jazz comes up to Megatron and is like, you want a piece of me? You want a piece of me? And Megatron rips him in half while saying, no, I want two.
No, that's pretty fire.
I mean, that's pretty fire. out of all villain lines, like when you're killing a hero, that's pretty good.
Since we're kind of, you know, we're introducing the Transformers, I just want to say, I just don't care about the glasses. I don't care about that plot. I don't even really think it matters.
Do you care about any plot? Because I don't.
No.
Actually, that's not true. I do care about one plot.
What?
I like Sam and Bumblebee.
No, I like their friendship too.
Yeah.
So after the Transformers are introduced, we get introduced to Agent Simmons for the first time.
Yeah, which comes so late
into
in
the movie.
Movie.
Yeah.
We're like an hour and 20 into the movie when Sector 7 and John Turturro, who's supposed to be a big character, and for the record is a big character in the other movies too, like finally gets introduced.
Yeah. I wrote down Yuck.
Yuck? You wrote down Yuck because he said something creepy towards Megan Fox.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was like a little bit redemption towards the end.
Was there?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
No.
But like, that was gross. You should not be saying disgusting comments about an 11th grader, even if that 11th grader is Megan Fox.
Well, yeah, definitely not.
Definitely not.
We don't need to qualify it with
not. No qualifications at all. But like, even if like Megan Fox, an actor who is above the age of 18, you should not be making this comment.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, also, I want to mention this while we're talking about the Transformers arriving scene. One thing that is really great about this movie, and I'm saying that like in all seriousness, the score is awesome. Like, Steve Jablonski's score for this movie is incredible. I don't know how much you, like, paid attention to it or listened to it, but specifically in that scene when all the Autobots are arriving, the track is called Arrival to Earth. It's awesome. It's on my movie score playlist, so I listen to it all the time.
I unfortunately was not paying attention.
We'll listen to it in the car.
Yeah, we'll listen to it after.
It's a really good score, and I would say, you know, for as much bad as in this movie, I do think on a technical level it really nails some aspects, including the score.
I felt like technical wise it's fine, like visual effects, sound design, score, but
yeah, I think this was nominated at the Oscars for visual effects and sound editing, maybe sound mixing.
It was two categories back then, but like
right, I mean that's new, like the one category.
Yeah, it's recent. But either way, it did not make up for the fact that this movie did not have a seeming, did not seemingly have a direction.
No, not really. Not really. Also, one more thing I want to mention about the all the Autobots arriving scene, because this is also such a Michael Bay thing to do. All the Autobots arrive, their asteroids hit various places, and you see, like, one outside of a restaurant, and, like, there's, like, these college kids, like, screaming and be like, oh my god, this is crazy, and there's one kid who's like, this is crazier than Armageddon, which, like, is another Michael Bay movie. So it's essentially Michael Bay just, like, in a meta way being like, you guys thought Armageddon was good? Now we're in Transformers, and it's great.
See, and I think that's why, like, I don't think I would enjoy many Michael Bay movies.
No, no. You know what? Honestly, though, Ambulance, I really enjoy Ambulance. I think it's very good.
Okay. So, we have to talk about the elephant in the room.
What's the elephant in the room? There's so many. There's Transformers in the room. That's what we're talking about.
Product placements.
Yeah, there's a lot of product placement. This movie, honestly, rewatching this movie, it's not as bad with product placement as many of the other movies.
Yeah, but I do agree that one scene where one of the Transformers basically reads the data of this, like, Mountain Dew vending machine and then becomes that was really goofy.
That wasn't even what it was. It was the AllSpark Cube, which had the power to turn objects into Transformers, essentially. Turn a Mountain Dew vending machine into a Transformer.
That's what that did.
That's what it did. Because remember, there was the scene where they have the... Also, product placement, the Nokia phone turned into a little mini, like, killing machine Transformer. You have, like, John Turturro give a whole monologue about how much he loves Nokia, while also, like, completely misstating where Nokia is made.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was also an Xbox in that scene, and, like, the sound that you hear when the Xbox, like, turns into a Transformer is, like, the Xbox boot up sound.
I did not catch that. Yeah. I'm not a gamer girl.
That's okay. I'm not really a gamer boy. I just know the sound.
Gamer boy. I did write down, it's crazy how Megatron is much bigger than the other robots. And I said Rip Jazz to that.
Yeah, Rip Jazz. Well, I think Jazz is just smaller is what it is.
No, but like Jazz is about the same size as the other ones.
He's not really though.
Jazz is definitely shorter. But Megatron is definitely bigger than Ironhide.
But, like, Jazz is just small. Like, that's what Jazz is.
Yeah, but Megatron's
Rip Jazz,
big.
Man. Like,
but, like, also,
crazy.
Who cares?
I do. I don't know.
I wrote down Optimus Prime is a bad A.
Yeah, bad A. Okay. Optimus Prime is great. And, like, you know, we've already mentioned it several times, but, like, Peter Cullen's voice is fantastic in these movies. One of the best parts of them. There really are, like, there's all these, like, little snippets of good in this movie. And I don't think it fully adds up, which is unfortunate. So all the Transformers have arrived, and now, well, actually, then we get to move on to one of my favorite scenes. I actually do love this scene, because I think it's top-notch comedy, is when they go back to Sam's house, and they're looking for the glasses, trying not to, like, let his parents know that there's a bunch of giant robots in the yard. And so you get all these scenes of the Autobots just sneaking around, bumbling around, and the best part of this entire scene is when Sam is like, you gotta go hide, you gotta disguise yourselves or whatever. So they just all transform into cars on the lawn. They're just
like an 18-wheeler.
There's an 18-wheeler. There's a Camaro. There's an ambulance. There's whatever. Ironhide is a truck. It's great. Yeah. Jazz is a Porsche.
Yeah, no, that was funny.
I think it was funny. I think there's moments in this movie and in the other movies too where Michael Bay does understand how to pull off like a comedic scene, but then he just gets a little bit too into himself.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like though none of the good aspects with the comedy are really doing it for me just because the movie's all over the place. And I think it was like soon after that where somehow they go to the Hoover Dam. And that's when everything kind of converges. Because we have all three storylines coming together.
Yeah, all three storylines. So soldiers Lennox and Epps are at the Hoover Dam now. The hackers are at the Hoover Dam. And now Sam and Michaela are going to the Hoover Dam where they've captured Bumblebee. And they're torturing Bumblebee.
Torturing him.
Yeah, torturing Bumblebee.
Which is sad because he can't even speak.
Yeah, no, I mean, Bumblebee.
He can't be like, oh, that's
Bumblebee's sucks. So innocent. I mean, he's so innocent. He just seems so sweet.
He just loves Sam.
He does just love Sam. He wants to be Sam's protector.
Yeah.
And then also, we find out that the Hoover Dam is where they're storing Megatron, who was discovered in the ice 100 years before by Sam's grandfather, or great-grandfather, Archibald.
Yeah.
Such a grandfather name, Archibald.
Definitely, because it was like 1897.
I think it was later than that. Was it 1897? I thought it was like 1912.
Same difference.
Yeah, same difference. It doesn't
matter. Same Gilded Age era.
I don't think 1912 wasn't the Gilded Age anymore. But
either way.
All right. History.
Either way, pre-World War I.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was a weird scene because he just kind of like falls into the ice and then discovers this Transformer that is completely more advanced than anything at that time.
I want to see the logistics of how they got him out of the ice.
I just don't. Yeah.
I want to see that.
None of this is probable. Which I don't need realism in movies to like it.
No, especially not a movie about giant, crazy alien robots.
Like,
but
I absolutely love The Hunger Games.
Well, I don't know if that's unrealistic.
But yeah, no, wait, bad example. But like,
it's unfortunate to say.
No,
but like,
right. Bad. Okay, I like. I'm trying to think of a sci-fi movie, but I literally can't. Back to the Future.
Okay, yeah, Back to the Future.
I like Back to the Future.
Wait, you're trying to tell me time travel isn't real? I can't time travel in a DeLorean?
I mean, Star Wars is good.
Okay.
It's not my go-to franchise.
We just watched Phantom Menace the other day.
And I almost fell asleep.
Yeah, that's true.
Slash did for a little
bit. Did you? Yeah. You didn't fall asleep during Duel of the Fates, though, right?
I don't know what that scene is.
Oh, that's okay. It's fine. Moving on. Yeah, so Megatron is in the Hoover Dam. We also the Allspark is
so
in the Hoover
cube,
Dam.
Yeah,
so is the Cube, which
the Cube and the Allspark are the same thing.
Yes, the Cube and the Allspark are the same thing, and they tell us that the Hoover Dam was actually built because of the Allspark.
Yeah,
it was built around it.
Which is like, oh my God, American history just completely rewritten for us.
There's so many parts of these movies where history is rewritten to make sense with the Transformers.
No, and yeah, it makes absolutely no sense.
Like, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm just going to say it anyways. In the second movie, the pyramids are Transformer related.
Of course they are.
Yeah, no, it's just...
Of course they are. I know, and now you're going to tell me that they built the coral reef too. Like they built.
They built the coral reef.
The Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah.
No, it's literally so ridiculous. Basically, them saying that they built the Hoover Dam on top of the Cube. I just don't even understand the logistics behind that. It was wild to me that
Sector 7.
Why do I not? I keep saying it wrong.
Yeah.
It's wild to me that Sector 7. Just casually was like, which by the way, the Secretary of Defense didn't even know existed. It's just like, hey, by the way, there's a cube that contains massive amounts of energy here. We've been housing it here for almost 100 years. Like, that is so wild that no one, and then they open the door and there's like hundreds of American employees working there.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
There were a lot of people in that factory. or warehouse or whatever.
Yeah, there were. And also, here's the thing. It didn't really seem like they learned a lot from it.
Yeah, like...
They had Megatron and the Allspark for, like, a century. But for why?
I don't even know.
I mean, yeah, like, I think it's definitely good to, like, you know, maybe keep this guy on ice because he seems like he could be dangerous. Keep an eye on, like, this giant cube or whatever. But I also, you know, I would imagine that they'd be trying to, like, study things. And, like, it really just seemed like they got nowhere.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, hey, you know, it doesn't matter because now all the Autobots are there. And they can, you know, they rescue Bumblebee. And he transforms the Allspark into just a tiny little cube, like the size of a Rubik's Cube.
And somehow they go back to L.A., right?
No, that's not L.A.
That's what I was confused about. I wrote down the entire cityscape of this battle just doesn't even look L.A. to me.
No. It's like a fictional city that they called, like, Mission City, I think.
Near Hoover Dam?
Near the Hoover Dam.
I didn't even realize that.
They said it was 22 miles away from the Hoover Dam.
Okay.
I don't know.
Can't they just make that Vegas or something? Vegas is somewhat close.
I think Vegas is too, like, then you would have to definitely film in Vegas. Like, I think that's just too...
Okay, that
iconic.
Makes more sense, because I was like, are we back in L.A.? Like, what is happening?
No, completely fictional city.
Okay, yeah.
So then
the Transformers win, and they kill
Megatron.
I, like, kept saying, I said at one point Megadon.
Megadon.
Megalodon.
Megalodon. Yeah, it's actually, Megatron, he kind of has a shark-like face, you know, like, with yeah. teeth. He's got
so
kind of, like, shark
back?
Teeth.
I feel like this is crazy that they killed him off in
maybe.
The first movie.
He might. Should I say? I don't know.
Case's tail is big.
Oh, her tail is big. That's crazy. I don't know why.
So her cat's tail is big, and that's usually indicative of her being nervous or scared.
Yeah,
and
I don't know.
I don't know why it's big. But, yeah, so they
She's
win.
Scared of Megatron.
Yeah, so they win, and...
I like that we're just skipping over the whole battle. It doesn't matter.
Does it matter?
I don't know.
We talked a little bit about it. Jazz dies.
Jazz does die. Megatron has a killer line. Also, we're not even acknowledging Megatron's voice actor, Hugo Weaving, who's fantastic.
I don't even know who that is.
I told you last night. You know, he's Elrond in Lord
oh,
of the Rings.
Oh, in Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
He's also Red Skull in Captain America.
Yes, you did tell me. Yes. I'm sorry. I completely
yes.
missed that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a...
The battle was a good scene visually.
You know, here's... And I know that you don't have the other movies to compare this to, but one thing I was taken aback by, like, in a good way, was the transformations in this movie.
Are very good.
Are really, really good. You can tell they put a lot of effort and detail in this movie on, like, the visual effects for, like... In general... But, like, the transformations in particular, I think, were really good. I think that's something that kind of gets lost in the later movies.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, I mean, I felt like that's what they spent their budget on.
Yeah. No, you're...
It was definitely making sure the transformations and visual effects looked good. I mean, I feel like there's not much to say about the battle, for me personally at least. I mean, the Transformers obviously are winning. Sam is trying to get to... the top floor of that hotel so he could give the cube to the U.S. military. And happens. So.
When you have Decepticons that can fly, that really just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Like
the whole plan
no,
seemed very
no
much
No part of that
together.
Plan seemed like a good plan to me.
And it wasn't.
No, it was a bad plan. But they ended up winning in the end. So, like, it's fine. Sam actually, he has a smart decision. He realizes that Optimus Prime is willing to sacrifice himself by putting the cube in his chest. And he's like, well, if that's going to kill Optimus, what would it do to Megatron? Let me put the cube in his chest and see.
Yeah.
And it kills him. So, you know, honestly, good decision from him. Now, one thing I do want to say about the battle sequence, and this is a compliment to it, is, like, something that a lot of people get up in arms about with, like, movies like this. Like, where the main characters are, like, CGI creations and you want more time with them, but then you get more time with the humans. Like, these movies, the Godzilla and King Kong movies, anything like that, where people are like, we want less humans, or, like, what are the humans even really doing? Like, what's their impact? I liked how Michaela was, like, integrated into the battle. I thought that was a pretty clever way to, like, get her involved. And how that is Bumblebee essentially loses his legs. They've been like broken off, so he can't walk. So Michaela hooks him up to a tow truck and is driving around while Bumblebee is like shooting Decepticons and whatnot. Like I thought that was actually pretty clever.
Like I felt like, and it wasn't just Michaela being integrated, but we do get more integration from the people, the military folks. So Josh Duhamel.
Yeah, but that's still one of those things where it's like they're firing regular guns. Yeah. They're not really doing
that's
a lot.
Expected,
like
I guess,
like every single movie when the soldiers come in, it really just feels like they're cannon fodder waiting for Bumblebee or Optimus Prime to come in with a cannon and take down the Decepticon.
Yeah.
One thing that I love about Josh Duhamel's character, Lennox, is he's just on board immediately.
Yeah.
Like, he just met Sam, and he's already, like, threatening John Turturro's character and being like, you give this boy his car back. And it's like, you don't know him.
Yeah.
But you're in.
Yeah.
Your vibe is good right now.
I really liked that one line where John Turturro's character, Agent Simmons, was like, I'm going to count to five. And Will was like, Josh Duhamel's character was like, I'm going to count to three.
Yeah,
I
that
was like, wait, that was kind of bicycle.
That was a baller line. That
was
also
a baller
line.
Line.
There's several baller lines in this movie. So
there's a few lines where I'm like, I can get behind it. Okay, maybe I'll add that to my pro list. But
yeah, but one disappointment though, and this sucks because he's in all the other movies that Josh Duhamel is in too. Is I feel like Tyrese Gibson isn't given a lot to work with as Epps.
Yeah,
he gets like a bigger role in other movies. Yeah, I mean, I'm always down for a little bit more Tyrese Gibson. He's also in the Fast and Furious movies, which I know.
I mean, I don't know if that's like a positive.
Well, no, he plays like the comic relief character in the Fast and Furious movies, and like I think he does a generally good job. So like he can do good with the comic relief kind of role, and I feel like he was a little bit more subdued in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, that was like a major con. I wrote down. I didn't really get what the soldiers were bringing to this movie, to be honest, or what the other storylines were doing. I feel like I would rather have focused more on just the Sam with the Transformers. Obviously, I understand there's going to be some influence from the government. I mean, duh, it's literally like foreign alien robot creatures.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't feel like we needed to dive in a whole storyline on like these hackers from the Pentagon. But that was just me, though. So then after the final battle happens and the Transformers win, the U.S. government shut down Sector 7, and then they dump Megatron and the Cube into, like, the deepest part of the ocean.
Yeah, they said it was, like, the Laurentian Trench or something. I thought the Mariana Trench was...
I thought the Mariana Trench was that, too, but they said it was 7 miles deep.
I don't know. I don't have the care to actually look it up.
You're right. That they rewrote that history too.
if I actually looked this up, this movie would be impacting me too much. That's the thing.
Right. I don't
want
to think about this movie after.
So, gosh, I realized I didn't really take a lot of notes when we got to the battle scene.
Me either.
Because it's the battle scene.
That's just when I wrote Optimus Prime is amazing.
Optimus Prime is great. He's awesome.
The battle scene
had a lot of lens flares in it. There were so many lens flares in this movie in general.
I don't know what that means.
It's like when like the camera kind of hits the light and like
I know what you're saying. I have some photos like that.
And
then after I wrote this down, I thought this was funny. I'd said this to Tate during the movie because I thought it was hilarious.
I don't know where this is going.
After Megatron is dumped into the ocean, we get this final scene of the Transformers all acting as cars. So Optimus Prime is back in his 18-wheeler, like, disguise. Bumblebee's back at his car, whatever.
Oh, my God.
And they're back in L.A. And Michaela and Sam, now together as a couple, are literally making out on top of Bumblebee. Like, on the hood of the car. So Bumblebee literally as a car. And I looked at Tate, I said, are they a throuple?
No.
Because why were they making out of Bumblebee? They know this is like an actual like robot with like feelings.
Yeah, see, that's crazy to me. But you know what's even crazier? The rest of them were there.
I know.
All the other Autobots are watching.
I was like, is this a kink? Like,
They're pervs.
I know. why are we watching? Like, and also, like, get a room. Like, why? You know, all of these cars have feelings.
Yeah, that was, I mean,
like, in any second, they can transform to, like, their human-like state.
Yeah, that human-like state.
Yeah, well, I mean, with arms and legs.
Yeah. Like
the
anthropomorphic state. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was weird.
That was odd.
And that's the last...
That's the last scene.
Before, I want to go into the cut to credits, and then we can give, like, our overall final thoughts and whatnot. But before that scene, I wrote this down because I thought this line was hilarious. So, like I said, Sam puts the AllSpark into Megatron, which, like, overloads him with energy and kills him. Sam does that, right? And then the very next line is Optimus Prime standing over Megatron's body and being like, "You left me no choice, brother." And it's like, you didn't do a thing. Like, yeah, you battled him, but, like, Sam killed him.
Right.
Sam's the one who, like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Why are you trying to take credit for this?
No, that's like, yeah. That's like in a group project when those people, there's one person that's doing the whole thing and that's Sam.
Yeah.
And then the other Transformers are the people that aren't doing work.
I thought that was funny. But yeah, so, you know, the last scene is whatever is happening with Sam and Michaela making out on top of Bumblebee.
Yeah.
And when you say on top of Bumblebee versus on top of a car, it really just highlights...
It sounds weird because it is weird.
It's so weird. But then you get the best cut to credits of 2007. I'm going to specify 2007 because there's a lot of great other cut to credits out there. But Optimus Prime, he does a speech and he's like, "Calling all Autobots in space. We're here and we're waiting." And, like, you can kind of hear, like, the music, like, swelling, like, underneath. And then as soon as his speech finishes, it cuts to directed by Michael Bay with "What I've Done." And it's, I love that cut to credits.
Is this
so
making
much.
It into the box?
Yeah, this is, no, this is, a, this
okay,
is the,
Mr. Chorus, Mr. Choir.
This is the best part of the movie. It really is.
Yeah.
When it cuts the credits.
Really, you literally hyped that up. You're like, "Oh my God, I love the cut to credits." And I was like, "Okay, that was mediocre."
I think it's great. I love the song. I love like Optimus Prime's like ending speech. I love the song. I think it's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was okay.
Okay.
So that was very discombobulated, but I felt like we got most of the points across.
Yeah, we really did.
And I feel like now we can start with our final thoughts. So here's what I put.
Okay. Oh, you wrote something down.
I just wrote down my final score.
Oh, you're
and
okay.
And my pros cons. My pros, action sequences in this movie were good. Visual effects were also very good and well done. I liked getting to know the Transformers and their personalities, specifically Bumblebee, Optimus Prime. And I feel like maybe that's about it. I feel like I didn't get to see that much of Ratchet and Ironhide and definitely not Jazz because I didn't even remember him. Cons, I didn't like how it was filmed. Sorry, Michael Bay. I don't like all the cuts that were happening. It was just very awkward to me.
Well, that's the Bayhem of his filmmaking.
It was chaotic. The length.
2 hours and 23 minutes.
We already know my thoughts.
Yeah.
We already know my thoughts. All of the different storylines, could have done without two of those. Okay, could have done without two of those. And then I just didn't really get the point of the soldiers or the Pentagon hackers. So with that, my final thing is hopefully Sam will continue to make A's in his class. And I give it a 5 out of 10.
Wow, that's better than what I thought you were going to give it. I'll say that.
You know, maybe I'll change it to a 4 out of 10 because I do have more cons than pros. And if I have more cons than pros, it's not a 5 out of 10.
But I gave you a couple more pros with the baller lines.
But then cons with the product placement. 4 out of 10.
Well,
I'm changing.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm changing. 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10.
Abby's a 4 out of 10. So, you know, I've seen this movie before. But I will say, I hadn't seen this specific one in a long time. I don't know why that is. I think I just kind of wanted, you know, everyone criticizes these movies so much, and rightfully so, that I just wanted to preserve this one. And what I was kind of struck by rewatching it is it's really boring for a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's because we were watching it, like, I mean, we weren't even watching it that late. We started at, like, 8:30.
Yeah.
So, you know, I felt tired.
Yes.
I felt bored.
I was like hooked from like the first scene where, you know, all this action was taking place. And then almost immediately that hook ended.
It
and
really,
I just, I wasn't connected anymore.
It really takes forever to really like get into it. And yeah. I think the biggest issue is that there are all these different plots going on when in reality, the main plot and the plot that really attracted Steven Spielberg to this movie, because he's an executive producer. He was like, yeah, he almost directed it too.
No, Steven.
Yeah,
no.
Well, Steven Spielberg and, you know, a lot of people behind this movie really love the idea of like a boy in his car. So like Sam and Bumblebee, like I think that central storyline is really good. And I think when they focus on that, that's like when they show the bond that they're creating, I think that's great. I think it's awesome. But then you have all of the other storylines, you know, you have the NSA hackers, you have the soldiers in the Middle East. And then later on, of course, you get like full Sector 7, like John Turturro, who I think is great. And I think he's a great inclusion to this franchise. He just comes in so late in the movie to the point that you're like, how are we still introducing new characters?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even like they could have showed him a little bit earlier. And the craziest thing about that to me, I know I'm rambling on here, but the craziest thing about that is they introduced John Turturro's character as part of like Sector 7, right? And then like 5 minutes later, they introduce another Sector 7 character as well.
Yeah.
Played by Michael O'Neill, who was Ron Butterfield in The West Wing. So really cool to see him. But I was like, why are we still introducing
the characters,
all of these new characters?
In. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No, literally.
That being said, you know, I have the other movies to compare this to. I think that the movie, the franchise definitely goes downhill. Like I said, I love the third movie. But the second, fourth, fifth, oh gosh. This movie has a lot of good to it, I think. I think it also has a lot of bad, and I think I definitely didn't like this as much as I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, there's some clever moments. There's a good central storyline. The visual effects, the score, I think are incredible. So I would put this at a 6 out of 10.
Wow.
I'll tell you, that's probably the second highest score that I'll give to any Transformers movie, not counting Transformers 1, because I think Transformers 1 is very good.
Wow, so that's two animated scores add up to 10.
Yeah, they do.
So I think that's a win.
I think that's a win. I think that's great for Transformers.
So, yeah, I think that is a good first episode, and we are so happy that you could join us. We will be doing weekly podcasts, and episodes will be released on Wednesdays. You can find us on Instagram at A Tale of Two Takes. And yeah, thank you for joining.
Yes, thank you so much for joining. And please don't forget to follow us on Spotify and follow us on Instagram. And
Apple Podcasts, I think.
Oh, are we doing Apple Podcasts too? We're doing...
I don't know.
We're figuring it out.
We're figuring it out. If you are friends with us and you're listening, we're sorry if this was cringe. That is just a learning curve, and we're going to get better. And I actually had so much fun. The whole point of us doing this is to kind of have more of a creative outlet, at least for me and my normal day-to-day life. And I think it's so much fun to do this with my now husband.
Yeah.
So
I had a great time doing this with my wife.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to get some special guests on here, hopefully, at some point.
Yeah. A Tale of Three Takes.
A Tale of Three Takes. All right. Bye, y'all.
All right. Thank you.